Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico. Tonight, I'm very excited to be joined by another great guest, John Dunnigan, and I'm going to bring him on here in just a second, but I just want a quick reminder for those of you that are tuning in live this evening. You can also call into the program if you want to speak to either myself or my guest. You can call into the number here is 646-716-4667. That number again is 646-716-4667. And if you're a little bit shy and you don't want to come on and talk to us live, you can email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com, and you can submit a question if you'd like for our guest. And we'll try and read that through some point through the program. So you can email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com as well. And also, don't forget to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. Make sure you put the blog on the end there. And certainly appreciate it if you throw a few likes our way. Also, my Twitter handle, for those of you that want to send me a tweet, it's Ted and Buck, CEO. You can do that. Send me a tweet. I love to read those. And also appreciate if you check out the Golf Talk Live blog at golftalkliveblog.com. There's some great guests that have been on the program, some upcoming guests, and also as I was just telling John off air here, I'm going to be putting up a lot of the books and DVDs that they're promoting on the blog, so that those of you that are surfing on my blog can get a chance. An opportunity to see what they're offering, and I'll have the links, direct links back to their sites and or outlets that you can purchase these items from. So make sure that you check out the Golf Talk Live blog at golftalklive.com. But anyways, as I said, my guest tonight is John Dunnigan, and he is was the 2012 PGA Philadelphia Section Junior Golf Leader, as well as the 2008 PGA Philadelphia Section Teacher of the Year. He's currently the director of coaching at the White Manor Country Club in Malvern, Pennsylvania. And you can contact John through his website. We'll talk a little bit more about that throughout the program at www.johndunnigan.com. And it's Dunnigan is spelled D-U-N-I-G-N. Without further ado, let me welcome John to the show. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ted. I'm happy to be here. Hey, if I can just do one thing, the Dunnigan is D-U-N-I-G-A-N. You missed the A in the last name. That's okay.
Did I? I pause. So it's D-U-N-I-G-A-N. I'm sorry. Speak a little fast, so it probably came out. So I apologize. We'll make sure we get that right, but thank you for pointing
You'll
that out.
You'll hear me mumble a lot.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, welcome to the show, John. I appreciate you coming on. And for those of you that are tuning in live here, John and I were just talking a little bit off the air and about some things that I'm going to be doing with the program and certainly want him to participate. Before we get into that, John, I want you to take this opportunity. As I mentioned to you, we broke tonight's program down in three different segments. In the first segment, I want you to take the opportunity and just tell the listeners here a little bit about yourself, how you got started in the game and what you're doing now and how they can get a hold of you and that sort of thing. So you just, the floor is yours.
Uh-oh. Don't get me started talking, Ted. So I started as a tennis player. I went to college to play tennis in Southern California and promptly freshman year blew up my shoulder pretty badly, rehabbed it for a long time, and then came back the next season. Played one match and I was done. And I transferred from UC Irvine to Binghamton and somehow, and I really don't really remember how, started playing golf. I have no idea how I started playing golf. I think it's anything with a stick and ball I'm a fan of, you know, whether it was hockey, you name it,
right. That's
my kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really don't know what happened, but I remember I got a job. I used to ride my bike to the golf club, and I would open, get the carts out, get the range set, go play golf. I used to run between holes. It was awesome. My uncle, who lent me his golf club, said, you know, I've heard that some idiot's out there running along the golf course between holes, and it was me. But I would play all darn day, and then I'd be done in time to put all the carts away, you know, wash and put them away, pick the range.
Right.
And I did that every damn day during summer. So, you know, that summer, I think I must have been about 20 years old. So, yeah, I didn't hit a golf ball. Well, that's not totally true. I used to take the balls out of my dad's golf bag and hit them into the woods with my baseball bat. I had no idea how expensive they were. But that's how I got into it. And then I went nuts. I got, you know, it's like sort of the second I started hitting the golf ball, that was it. I knew what I was going to do for a living. I didn't think I'd be teaching, to be quite honest. I thought I'd be playing,
right.
But it didn't work out. I did try playing, but it didn't work out. If I knew now what I know then, maybe things would have been different. But I didn't know very much then, to be quite honest. So,
well, and it's
those first bunch
actually,
of lessons weren't good.
Right. It's interesting that you actually really got a relatively late start in golf.
Very late start.
Some of the other guests, some of the others, well, for myself, for instance, I mean, my father, you know, first introduced me to the game when I was, you know, basically, as I've said before, knee high to a grasshopper.
Right.
And, you know, I got introduced to the game then, but I really started to play when I was about seven, I would say. Certainly got introduced to it before then, but got to about 7 years of age and just sort of, you know, progressed. And it was actually really probably in about, I'm going to be 50 next year, so it gives you an idea what you're dealing with. But probably about halfway through is when I started to get more involved in the teaching end of it and have taught privately for quite a number of years. And I really enjoy it. And, you know, in hindsight, I wish I had have done some other things differently and gotten out here a lot sooner. But you know, here I am. And so it's kind of interesting when you see somebody of your caliber who really started the game quite late by comparison, because many of the other guests, you know, much like my story, started very, very young and, you know, sort of, you know, eat, slip and whatnot golf from a very, very early age. But you really were in other sports and other activities before you sort of took up this game.
Well, you know, actually, I'm going to say that there's an advantage to that, becoming a well-rounded athlete. You know, I have this saying, you give me an athlete, I'll make him a golfer in no time. You know, I'd like to see, you know, I'm in, involved with the TPI program and the juniors where just the other day I had kids hitting on this baseball trainer and on the, I have a hockey net and some sticks. And doing that kind of stuff, you know, anything stick and ball, truly, any kind of basketball will work, soccer, all that good stuff that helps with the cross coordination is not the right word, but, you know, just becoming more athletic. And, I wish I had started playing golf earlier. I really do. But, you know, I think my understanding of spin, you know, balance, all that kind of stuff that I got from hand-eye coordination from tennis and all the other sports I played certainly gave me a leg up. I mean, I shot 76 in 3 months of taking up the game. You know, that's just, you know, the golf club isn't much different from a tennis racket. Nah, you know, it's the same sport, except I don't have to run, which is even better.
Yeah. It does. You never know; they might bring that into the sport at some point. So, but you know what's interesting about that? You make a very valid point about you know, really taking an athletic person and sort of molding them into a golfer. Because if you think about it, look at some of the you know, the different athletes over the years, whether it be football players, baseball players, who, you know, as their careers wound, and I'm talking about at the pro level, you know, how many of them have sort of gravitated into golf. You know, once their sport sort of, you know, beat the tar out of them, which is true in a lot of cases. Now they're out there playing golf, and it's almost like they started. And some of them, which is kind of ironic, really, some of them never really played golf as a junior, but just because they have that coordination that you talked about, and just the athletic ability, golf was a relatively easy crossover for them, much easier than I think somebody that's sort of starting from you know, ground zero.
Oh, man. If you were an adult person with limited athletic ability and trying to take the game up at 35, man, oh, man. Good. I you know, that's going to be an uphill battle.
Right. Yeah. And that's true. Obviously, I think if you've played other sports and hockey, you know, all those sports really, you know, mimic a lot of the golf swing. I mean, you know, they always talk about, well, hockey's, you know, this way and golf is on a different plane, which is true, but you still have that weight transfer and things like that that you have in the golf game in a lot of these other sports, especially baseball. Baseball probably more so than hockey. But you have to have that balance. And so, you know, obviously if you have that coordination in another sport to start yourself off, tennis as well, as you started out, it's going to make transitioning into a golf game that much easier for you, I think.
I'm telling you right now, that is the absolute fact. You know,
yeah.
If you can't, for instance, even if you can't catch and throw, if you've never learned how to throw, you may have a horrible time with the short game. So you may have very limited feel for distance because you've never developed that at an age when your brain was primed to learn that kind of stuff. So I think it's a really big deal. Not, you know, even all of the kids. I am, there's no way this sounds good when it comes out, but I am kind of blessed that I spend 90% of my time with competitive junior golfers.
Right.
Which is cool. So I'm dealing with that kind of stable of kids, I guess. But those guys, I am always telling them they can't stop playing the other sports. You know, now about age 14, 15, then we start to concentrate more heavily. By 15, 16 for sure, then it's all golf. You know, but I want them to have all that benefit of the athleticism from the other sports that you just don't get in golf.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really big deal.
Let me just ask you a quick question. I want to, you know, as we discussed off air, I want to allow you this opportunity in this first opening segment to, you know, tell a little bit about yourself, but also some of the things that you're offering in your programs and things like that. But you brought up a very interesting topic. But let me just ask you this quick question while we're on the subject of athletic players and things like that. What are some of the negatives about somebody being athletic? Can you think of a few that maybe you could share that, you know, for instance, I can think of one off the top. Sometimes and I'm talking about somebody transitioning from another sport into mm-hmm. golf. Let's say something like football. Baseball might be a little bit different, but football, where you know you got these guys are a little bigger and a little stockier and that, and very muscular in a lot of cases. Not that the baseball players aren't, but I've heard it said a lot of times, and I've seen it as well, where a lot of times it's harder for them to be. You know, sort of been able to finesse the ball. They want to muscle it because they're used to sort of that aggressive. So is that one of the areas that you think with somebody being more athletic
represents a challenge? You know, not to put football players down, but listen, it's a whole different type of motion when your job is to literally just try to drive somebody into the ground. That is not the same as pitching a ball over a bunker. You know, so they are not complementary. I don't think, you know, maybe the quarterback, I think it's probably, and I don't know this for a fact, but I think it's probably a good bet that the quarterbacks are by far the best golfers in the bunch because they're dealing with finesse all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Whereas
but
the
you
guys
know what I
mean, who
though,
are.
Right?
Yeah, but I think the big thing on the athletes part is they're used to being good at a sport.
Right.
They forgot that they had to kill themselves to get good at the sport. And they think that now that they're good at baseball, so to speak, so I'm a world-class baseball player, I should be a world-class golfer. And that, you know, probably not going to happen. And I do think that the better athletes, you know, I think that they have a problem with their expectations are out of whack,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they don't really have the patience to ironically, to learn the damn sport the same way that they learned the sport that they became a professional in. Because they you know, chances are when you've done that for that long, right? So a kid plays basketball since the age of whatever, 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even remember how much time he put in to basketball by the time he's a professional. It was always easy.
Right.
You know, and guess what? It wasn't. But they
don't. No, of course
they
not.
Just, they don't remember it, you know, and I think that they,
well,
I think a lot of adults have forgotten what it's like to learn. And it's a major hang up with the game of golf. So that's one of my big things is trying to teach people how to learn all over again, you know, like they learned every damn thing else that they did.
Well, and I think that one of the things that has sort of put a hamper, or a damper rather, excuse me, on that, and we've talked about this a little bit on Golf Talk Live here with some of the other guests, you know, with technology, I mean, it's a great thing, and I think the technology is wonderful to have, and it certainly enhances the game in many ways. But I think it's also, you know, everybody wants everything, you know, right now. They don't want to take the time to sort of put in, you know, that extra effort to become a better player. They want their videos right now. They want feedback right now. And, you know, they're texting and emailing and Twittering and everything else on here. And, you know, we all have to sort of follow suit a little bit. But I think in some ways it made it difficult, I think, for people to learn new skills because they're relying on so much technology to give them the answers. And I don't know if you find that as well, or
I think that's a very valid point. I think that some people also, I don't believe in talent at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe that the most talented person happens to probably be the hardest working person. And then we
right.
perceive them as talented when it's not really talent. They, you know, you develop talent through hard work. You know, we might call it
right.
talent, but it's just the guy's got skill because he worked hard to get them. And I think that we tend to forget that. You know, and just because, you know, it's sort of like I don't play golf anywhere near as well as I used to play golf.
No.
I don't. And I don't practice. I know more than I've ever known.
Right.
My smartitude is increasing weekly. But but the thing is, I don't put the time in to hone the skills.
Right.
You know, so I think I came to grips with that at about age 45. I'm 48 now. At 45,
right.
it occurred to me, dude, you don't deserve to play good golf. And I, you know, just because I know how it works doesn't mean I have the feel. You know, you have to have the feel. And so I just think that people don't, they have, you know, I just think people are absolutely unrealistic. And then you got, you know, well, I could buy a new driver and adjust it. You know what?
Yeah.
I think that the new technology is helping the elite golfers more than the normal golfers.
Right. Yeah. Let me just chime in on that. We and as I said, if you've listened to some of the programs, even as much as early as last week, I've talked quite a bit about this. And I want to sort of preface this first. You know, I'm certainly in no way am I, you know, trying to dog the manufacturers and things like that. They obviously have an agenda. They want to move more product, and that's great. But really, in some ways, they do a disservice to the industry because what's happening is people are under the illusion that the equipment is going to make their game better, and it will to a certain degree, but it will only improve it to the level of your ability. So in other words, as you just pointed out, the tour players as an example, they're going to reap the benefits from that driver that's going to give them a little bit extra distance because they know how to use it. But you get,
right.
you know, a 25 handicapper that doesn't know really that much about the swing, doesn't understand how it works and how their body works and that sort of thing. They're not going to get that, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 extra yards that's being advertised. And really, it bothers me a little bit that they're doing that. And I'm not, again, trying to knock any of the manufacturers. You know, I want them to come out with new things. I think it's great. It's exciting at some point. But at the same time, it makes your and my job as teaching professionals that much more difficult because people are unrealistic, as you just indicated, in their expectations. And a lot of it is because they're being sold on this equipment that, well, hey, I got this new such and such driver, and I'm not going to name names, but because they've all got them, or I've got this and that and the other, and you can improve somewhat, but if you don't have the ability to begin with, or the skills, or the knowledge, for that matter, it's not going to reap the benefits that you're being sold, and this is why you're seeing people replacing their equipment, you know, year after year. Because they're looking for that competitive edge when maybe coming to somebody such as yourself or myself and understanding what they need to do to get from point A to point B more efficiently and more effective with better results, suddenly that you know, $400 driver doesn't look so good anymore. You know what I mean?
No, I know. Listen, you're preaching to the choir. You know, how can they make clubs demonstrably better when drivers have a speed limit on them?
Right.
You know, the iron technology, I just don't. Does anybody make a bad iron? And yeah, I think that I want all my golfers to be fitted. I fitted two different guys during their golf lesson today for new clubs. I'm sorry. The second guy, after the first three balls, I said, guess what? I can't even handle you. Kid had 123 miles an hour club head speed.
Jeez.
I got nothing to fit him with. Unbelievable. I went, do it again.
How about some wrought iron?
Yeah, right. No kidding. We don't sell telephone poles. I think it would be a real wonderful thing if people tried to understand how the golf club interacts with the ball. So I started that whole get to know golf thing. Oh, all your folks can download that for free off my website. Just go down the home page, and it's a free download. It's an article I wrote on understanding why the ball's going where it goes, and then three drills to develop what I call the essential skills of ball control. It's kind of cool. I'm trying to get people to understand that golf is not a game of just, you know, the swing. A club can't give you skill, but you have to develop your skills. And for an astonishing number of people with jobs and kids, they're probably better off not trying to learn a whole new swing. They're probably better off developing the skills required to play the game at the level they aspire to.
Right.
Striking the golf ball solidly, predicting the flight. Those are the essential skills. And that's what you have to be able to do. And a lot of people simply don't have the time to change their swing. So if they do, some of those folks who try to actually change their swing, but they don't put the time into it, I think we have a danger of losing them to the game of golf. Because they're just, you know, if you take a guy that, for instance, if you take a guy that swings his driver and he swings it, you know, 10 degrees to the left and he slices it all day, and he takes one lesson a year, two lessons a year, okay, and doesn't practice because he's got a job and he's got four kids.
Yep.
You know, I think that guy's better off, let's test you, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's see, how good's this part of your game? How good's this part of your game? How good's this? Here is what we can do to develop those skills so that you can hit the driver in the fairway more, so that you can hit your approaches closer to the green, that kind of stuff. If people were channeled that way, I think we'd have more players having a good time in golf. And then for the folks who do have the time, they might get to learn how to apply the club to the ball differently, or even move their body, you know, through space differently. Mm-hmm. But I do think we might the people definitely under practice. And I think some of us tend to maybe overteach. Well, I'm not sure about that. I don't know enough guys who teach, and I haven't seen in action enough. But I just think my approach to the game is I'm going to help you develop your skills. And anything that whenever I make any kind of swing change, it's simply because that move in your swing is causing this skill to break down. So we're going to do this to get that skill. That's how I approach the whole thing. And I, you know, as long as the clubs fit them. I do have a real big problem since we're on the club thing. There is the length of the drivers is driving me crazy. Nobody can hit the face. Part of that get to know golf thing has a section on gear effect. And you know, if you hit the ball, let's say you have the world's greatest draw swing. You swing 3 degrees inside out. Your club face is 2 degrees to the right. So the ball should take off to the right, draw right back, and hit it right in the hole. And you hit the ball, you know, a quarter inch toward the heel. That ball just sliced into the right rough,
yeah,
or worse. And people don't even know that. You know, so I'm constantly preaching to everybody that I know these basic, you know, this is why the ball's going where it goes. I wish the whole world knew that stuff. Because at least when they did practice, or maybe when they just play, they could at least have some clue why the ball's going there. Like, other than I pick my head up. You know, God, for really, you picked your head up.
Well,
but, you
I
know,
think
you ever notice that? People say I pick my head up when they hit it fat and when they hit it thin?
Well,
I go, well, it can't be both, folks.
No. Well, see, what happens is, and this is sort of the vernacular that's been going on for years and years and years in the golf industry, is those are some of the common phrases that they've all heard. You know, oh, you're moving your head, you're doing this. So they assume that every time they have a misstep on the golf course, that's what it is. And it's not until you understand how the ball reacts to the different club paths and the way the positioning of the face and so forth like that, that's when you start to understand. And as a teaching professional, you obviously can't get into everything with your students, especially if they're only taking one lesson here and there, because they don't want it. They just want to know how they can get it from point A to point B and get it into the hole a little quicker. And just, you know, they're a weekend warrior, and that's about it. So you have to sort of, and we're going to get into that in segment two. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. But just very quickly, John, we'll wrap up this first segment. I want to give you an opportunity to plug. I know you've got a couple of books. One is going into undergoing a second edition.
Is going into a second edition. It's going to be pretty cool. Updated pictures, updated drills. You know, Amazon.com and my website. That will be done in the next couple of weeks. And the essential golf, the secret of the golf swing is more, you know, has, I'd say it's a little bit more technical than essential golf. Essential golf is meant for a person who's relatively new to the game to literally learn how to go from something I call the iron triangle, you know, the arms form a triangle. I'm sure you've seen that. I call it the iron triangle. So you go from the iron triangle putt, chip, so chip motion, pitch motion, and next thing you know, you're at the full swing. It teaches folks once again how to look at where the ball's going and understand what's happening. In that case, you're building a swing, but it still goes back to, okay, so here's the basic mechanics of movement in a golf swing that, you know, probably you should have in your swing. But here are the skills. Here are the drills to learn how to putt. Here are the drills to learn how to chip the golf ball. And that, you know, so it's all, you know, it's all meant to, I'm trying to help people learn and perform better.
So if I understand this correctly, then Essential Golf is more of a beginner's book.
Yeah, beginner to intermediate.
Starting out in the game. Right.
Yep.
And then
the secret of the golf swing is
something for a more advanced player. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds good. And those are available on your site, johndunnigangolf.com?
Yeah. And I have two DVDs, Slice Buster, and that's basically has to do with maybe I shouldn't have called it Slice Buster, but since everybody slices, I call it Slice Buster.
Sure.
It has to, once again, it starts out with, you know, why do you slice? And takes you through how to improve it. And it also talks about, you know, like swing things that should be in your swing, like the way your body needs to move, gives drills, all that kind of good stuff that can help people fix their slice. That one's got the same one. It's this, basically the same exact approach that I take when I have a student who's slicing. I got to tell you, though, I don't get many one-time students at all. Pretty much, if you're gonna work with me, you have to work with me. You know, although I give everybody the first try because they may not like me because I'm kind of a pain. And then professional impact is how to strike the golf ball solidly.
Okay.
And has a little bit to do with swing plane and stuff, but it's really mainly, you know, gosh, I think the world would be a better place if all golfers could simply hit the golf ball first, then the ground. So that one's for that. And then I have my, you know, my first, you know, it's a horrible production value, but I've heard great things about it. That would be The Secret of Your Golf Swing on DVD. But it's horrible production value. But, I, you know, there's a live lesson. It's 4 hours. There's a live lesson where I took a guy from slicing it to drawing it, right there in front of you. And, you know, people have said that's really cool. That's old though. So they're all on my website, and I have, I try to keep my blog up to date. Like there's a blog on there that's got some really cool stuff in it, and some silly stuff, but some of it's really cool. Like right now there's one on green reading that if you just look at the darn picture, you might go, oh my goodness, I better pay attention to that. You know, it's something that you can learn very quickly.
Right.
So that's all I've got going. I've got some training aids in the works and stuff like that. But mostly I'm just, I'm trying to get, I really want to do an ebook that you can download the videos on. So it's a, get rid of the paper stuff. That way I don't have to pack up boxes anymore because I'm tired of that. Just have everything electronically.
I think that's the direction. Yeah, that's the direction I think that the industry has really been going anyways. I know even a lot of the guests that have come on, some of the authors that have come on previously have indicated, a lot of them have e-books. I mean, they're certainly offering a limited amount of hard copy, but a lot of them going to the e-books. And even some of the magazines now offer it. And I think it's just because everybody's on their tablets and stuff. So
that's
part of technology, so...
Yeah, and that's really cool, and that should make things a whole bunch easier for people to learn. But then, I was just doing something. I'm doing a DVD right now. I should finish it tomorrow morning, and it's called Shank Buster. Now, I know that not a lot of people shank. It's a small market, but it's how to shank a golf ball and how to fix it. That'll be just only download. It's all video on that one.
Sure.
I'm just not going to use hard copy stuff. I'll tell you, the magazines are in trouble, I think. It's going to be all.
Yeah. I've noticed they've gotten a little thinner in storylines and training and more in advertising. And I hate to say this, especially as somebody my age, but if I open one more and see another Cialis or Viagra advertisement in a golf magazine, I'm going to scream. Just constant bombardment of stuff. But anyways, we don't want to get into that. But, it's just, to me, I think that you're right. I think the magazines are going. John, we're going to talk a little bit more towards the end, give you another opportunity to let the listeners know where they can get your books and things like that. But before we go into our next segment, I just want to quickly remind the listeners that for those of you that are just tuning in a little bit later in the broadcast, my special guest tonight is John Dunnigan. He's the director of coaching at the White Manor Country Club up in Malvern, Pennsylvania. He was also the 2012 PGA Philadelphia Section Junior Golf Leader and the 2008 PGA Philadelphia Section Teacher of the Year. So I'm very honored and blessed to have him on the show this evening. If you want to call into the program, you can call us at 646-716-4667, or you can email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com during the broadcast. If you've got a question, if you're a little shy and you don't want to come on air, you can certainly send me an email if you have a question for John or myself about what we're talking about here tonight. And also I want you to visit on Facebook at facebook.com/golftalkliveblog, and also check out the Golf Talk Live blog website, which is at www.golftalkliveblog.com. And for those of you out in the Twitter world, I'm on Twitter, yes, believe it or not, at Ted and Buck CEO. You can send me a tweet there, and I'll do my best to get back to you. I'm not that great at it, so forgive me, but I certainly love to read some of the tweets. But anyways, John, just to go on here, one of the things that I want to do in segment two is I really want to talk about for the average golfer out there, for the higher handicap down to, let's say, for now, we won't go beyond 5 handicap. And in fact, let's not even go down below 10 handicap for right now.
Okay, good.
Because I think you're getting into a different – once you start getting below 10, you're starting to get into obviously something that's a little bit more knowledgeable, a little bit more athletic like you talked about in the beginning. But what I want to talk about here is just very quickly, how do you approach a new student, number one, and what are the key things that you're looking for as a coach or a teacher in that student? What are you looking for when you first, somebody walks in and says, hey, I'm want some help with my game and that sort of thing. What are some of the things that you how do you approach that student, and what are some of the things that you're looking for?
Okay. Well, I don't have much of an icebreaker, so basically, my point is, okay, listen, if you're willing to practice, I'm going to show you exactly how to practice. If you're not willing to practice, okay, we'll have one golf lesson. You got to find somebody else. I don't, that's the good news. I just don't have to deal with the one-off lessons. I refuse to because I can't help somebody like that. Well, that's not totally true, but the thing is they'll hit it better in front of me, and in a week, you know, they're right back to where they were because they haven't had any time, any coaching through the process of learning, you know? So what I'm looking for is, okay, I have this little sheet. Rate your golf skills. How do you drive it? Scale of 1 to 10. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll ask them, how do you hit approach shots? Scale of 1 to 10. How do you hit your hybrid or long clubs? How do you hit your wedges? Right? What do you think about your putting? How about your short putting, 10 feet and in? How are you doing? So I'll give them this little questionnaire, okay? And I'll get answers. But then, you know, that's nice and that looks cool. But then I'm going to go, okay, now I'm going to watch you. And here's the first test. I'm going to give you, I like to give people 10 ball testing in front of the coach. And I do that
right.
A lot. I do that with professionals. I do that with kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did that most of the day today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to see where they, for lack of a better word, fail. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think failure is good. I'm going to try to push them to the point of failure. I did that today with a professional golfer. I want to see where you fail. And I want to tell you, okay, well, you know, we got to the 150 shot, and I'm kind of tracking, jeepers, you know, you hit 10 balls to 150, you hit the green three times, but you fatted five of them. So we got to work on the skill of solid contact first. You know, and I may, if I'm feeling nice, which I usually am not, of course, but if I'm feeling nice, I might let them go right through a bunch of the tests. But most of the time, if they start, if there's something fails right away, we stop right there. Go, well, there you go, folks. We got to start there.
Yep.
And they'll sometimes tell me, you know, I usually don't do that. And I go, well, you did
it today.
Okay. So
well,
we're going to find out what's causing
quick.
That. Yep.
Yeah. Let me just jump in real quick. I didn't mean to cut you off, but. When you do this test with them, obviously you're able to ascertain how honest they were during the test as well. I mean, obviously, you know, people are, you know, that's a good indication. I mean, obviously everybody's going to be, especially the higher handicappers. I mean, the pros, you know, they've sort of gotten over the nerves. I mean, they're on TV and things like that. But the high handicappers, you obviously have to factor in it. They're going to be a little nervous, you know, especially if they haven't taken a lot of lessons before in front of somebody, and especially if it's the first time with you. But you can get an idea if the guy, you know, rates his driving, you know, a 7, 8, or 9, and, you know, he's slicing and shanking and hooking and, you know, everything under the bus, you know, you can get a pretty good idea whether they've embellished on that test or not that you've given them, correct?
Yeah, right. So they you can't fudge the test. You can't, you know, because I'm giving you a fair test. I'm giving you 10 balls for crying out loud. Just so you know, in golf, you only get one, right? So
right.
I'm giving you 10 and to see if I see any patterns. And I'll be, you know, I'm not one of those guys that I might be videotaping that, you know.
Yeah.
But I might not be. You know, I'm going to see, let's say we're in the case of the fat shot again. You know, then we're gonna stop. So the tests, you know, we didn't do good enough on the test. Okay, fine, no problem. It happens. Well, our job is to master the skill of solid contact, and then we'll go right into that. You know, and I'll give them either drills or exercises, or you know, I might even show them then the video. See, this is killing you right here. But sometimes I won't even show them video. I'll have it on video if I need to.
Right.
But sometimes I won't. Sometimes I will just go, hey, you know what? We're going to move that bottom of that swing forward today. Okay? And we'll go right off on that. You know, I'm very heavily skill biased with a significant amount of technique bias. You know, I have some very, very preferred motions that I prefer, and I have some well, you can't get away with it. If you don't do this, we're dead meat. You know, the ones that I'll call the fundamental motions in golf, you know, and I'll look at those. But listen, there's too many people. How come Jim Furyk is so good at golf? Right? There's too many cases of, you know, less than pretty golf swings that get the job done. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are getting their butts kicked by guys with bad swings week in and week out.
Right.
Because they have better skills. You know, so again, I'm back to skills. We got to develop golfers' skills. That if we don't do that,
yep.
we're going to keep losing golfers at an alarming rate. And guess what? Guys like me aren't going to have jobs anymore.
Right. Exactly.
Let me ask you. I was going to do this actually a little bit differently, but I'm going to swap up the questions here. The next one is, what should a student be looking for when choosing a coach, instructor, you know, teacher? That sort of thing. You know what you're looking for when you're trying to, you know, help a student out. But what should they be looking for? And I'm not, you know, I don't want to get into this, you know, good and bad teachers type of thing. But what are some of the things? Because a lot of people are under the misnomer. As an example, you know, we used to watch more of the videos than that. I'm a tall player. I'm 6'4". So obviously, I would try to not necessarily mimic, but look at some of the taller, you know, professionals like a Nick Faldo or some of that's got my height and that and build and that sort of thing. But, you know, so you want to try and find somebody, but what are some things that if you were going to advise a person to take yourself out of the picture here as a teaching professional for a minute, but if you wanted to advise a friend, let's say, to go and take lessons somewhere, what would you suggest that he look for in that professional?
I would look for a guy who's going to take him on the golf course, work on his short game, work on his putting, and work on his full swing. Not just one of those. Somebody that's going to help him with the development of his entire golf game. I would look for that first. It's astonishing how few people can read greens, for instance. It's astonishing. I mean, they're not even close. And I'd look for somebody who was – I guess, you know, because this is my bias, obviously, but you asked me so. You know, somebody that is, you know, hell-bent on getting people to play the game better, not just swing the club better.
Right.
You know, and you know – I know I have a very good friend whom I love dearly. And let me tell you something. If I give him a golf lesson, he's a professional, that next five students is going to get that same golf lesson, whether it applies to them or not. So, you know, so what works for one person isn't necessarily going to work for the other, except, well, listen, everybody's got to hit the golf ball first. Everybody's got to be able to predict the flight. Right, those are the rules of golf. They're never going to change. So somebody, again, who's more interested in building skills than just building swings, I guess, is my point. I'm going to try to send somebody to.
Okay.
You know, I like to push my people kind of hard. I do. I try to get them to the point where I'm always challenging them. So I'd want my friends to go see somebody that who's going to go, okay, like, for instance – if we're having one of those tests, right, and I don't know this person, I have stopped those tests going, wait a second, I'm sorry, I had no idea you were that good. We got to make this test a little harder now, you know. But I'm going to always make that test harder because I believe golf is a test of your skills.
Right. And also, too, I think that you have to be able to adapt to that person's skill level because I think if you know, obviously you don't know, you know, especially with a student that's coming up first round, and, you know, you're not, you know, they're putting down whatever on the test. And as I said earlier, you know, you don't know until they actually start performing how accurate the test is, you know, is going to be. So, but once you start to see that, okay, this guy's, you know, pretty accurate and he's got something and he's not really being challenged yet, then you want to step it up a little bit because otherwise they're going to get bored too. They're going to feel like, you know, this is too easy and it's not challenging enough and it's not what I'm looking for. So you want to be able to do that. And that's a great point to, you know, for those listening out there, John makes a very valid point. You want to make sure that whoever you are connected with, whether it's a coach or teacher, what have you, you want to make sure that you're feeling like you're challenged. It's not just about learning the basics and things like that. You want to feel like you're being challenged throughout the process, because if you're not, then you're not truly going to learn. And I think what happens is that's another reason why I think a lot of people drop out, is they're not pushed enough. They're maybe in some cases they're coddled a little bit too much. And
yeah, we don't do that.
No.
I know what you're saying. Even with the juniors, man, there's a lot of coddling going on with juniors. They don't need it. They just don't, man. They like to be pushed.
Yeah.
From what
seen,
I guess my sample size is very tiny. You know, it might be a couple hundred kids, but the kids like to get better. You know,
right.
I think we can be too soft on them. You know, I really do think that.
Well, and that's so true, and that's really what what I was driving at here, is I think that in a teaching profession, you have to look at the skill level, and it's not just always based on a number. If somebody says, "Well, I'm a 10 handicap," and there's a lot of 10 handicaps that got pretty solid games, but they just don't understand how to play. I mean, they can hit the ball well, they can do all these things, but putting it all together, sometimes that's where they need the help. It's not necessarily their ball striking and that. It's just their maybe the mental side of the game that they need to have some help with. So, sometimes we don't always have to reinvent the wheel just because somebody has a high handicap. We need to just isolate what the areas are that they're struggling with.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Focus on that. And I think that's one of the problems, too, that's deterred people over the years. And again, I'm not, questioning anybody out there in the teacher profession, but I think in the past, that was a big problem. I don't think it's as bad now in overall, but I think there was a lot of cases, and I know I've seen it firsthand, watching some teaching professionals, and certainly nobody's perfect, but I think if they don't isolate what the real problem is and they just try to make too many changes, that student gets frustrated and ends up just saying, look, this is just too hard, I can't do it. And it's not because they're being challenged, it's just because they're getting so much information and so much focus on an area that maybe they were doing not too bad on and didn't really need to have it focused on, but now you've messed up their game. And they're just like, I can't deal with this.
Right.
So you can be right and wrong
at the same time as a golf teacher, as you know. You give them the right medicine, but at the wrong time, you're still wrong. And I like the idea of, I would guarantee that I'm getting close to 800 hours on the golf course this year. Now, I'm gonna get there in the high sevens this year. Of on golf course instruction. I'll tell you, I've just seen too many cases where people come up and they're hitting it good, and they're, even during the range testing and stuff, I'll go, okay, what's going on? And I suck. I had one student go, I suck. I can't do this on a golf course to save my life. And I said, okay, let's go out and see. And this is something I would never have seen this on the driving range. So he's hitting it beautiful at the driving range. I said, okay, let's go. Warm-up's over, boy. Let's go. We go straight to the 10th hole is right next to the driving range, straight to the 10th hole, and he hits maybe one of the worst shots I've seen in golf. And, I swore at him, of course. And I said, what the hell was that? He goes, that's what's happening. And so I had him hit it again, and I said, okay, I get it. Here's an interesting one. So we went to the driving range where you were just out there to work things out, warm up a little bit, and, you were making your swing. We got to the golf course where it's time to make the swing some more, and now all of a sudden you played a different game.
Right.
Like in his case, he was trying not to mess up. So it took us literally four holes. Which in my case was the guy swings really well.
Right.
Four holes to get him to go, listen, I don't care what you do. I want to see that swing at the exact same speed, even if we're on a golf course, for life.
Right.
And, on the fourth hole, he started to hit it again. But but it had nothing to do with the swing. It really had to do, he changed his mindset.
Yep.
Like all of a sudden people think, okay, this counts now. And, you know, so I had one student just today, and he shot 44. This is a man that cannot hit the golf ball. He shot 44 today. He had three pars. He's out of his freaking mind. I sent him to the golf course with – I didn't go with him, but I sent him to the golf course. I said, listen, all I want you to do – I don't want you to worry about whether the ball goes to the right or to the left. All I want you to do, your goal isn't score. How many times can you make your swing?
Yeah.
Right? You know, he's a newer golfer, very muscle-bound, great guy. You would love him. He's awesome. But he went out and shot 40 freaking four. He's out of his mind, you know, which is really cool. But, again, if he goes out there to shoot 44, he's probably dead. If he goes out there to learn some more, he might have a chance.
Well, and something, you know, you raise an interesting point. And I can remember going back, I was taught at a very early age, my father was a very, very good golfer. In fact, he blew his knee out some years earlier in a downhill skiing. And otherwise, he probably realistically could have played professional golf. He was that good. And one of the things that he always used to say to me is, I can remember, you know, when we were on the practice range, and, you know, same thing, I would hit the ball really well, and we would get out to, you know, the first tee, and he'd say, okay, you know, you go through your routine. So I'd take, you know, a practice swing or two, and then I'd get up there. And, of course, this is when I was real, real small. And, you know, would just flub the shot. It would be wherever, you know, everywhere except for where it needed to be. And one thing he used to say to me, he would say, Ted, he said, what happened to that nice swing that you just had, that you just practiced two or three? And he said, what you need to do when you address that ball is hit that ball with your practice swing. And the difference that I sort of processed, it took me a long time to understand what he was getting at, but really it's sort of the same analogy. I think what happens for most people, and we talked about this on several shows ago, but which is why I'm leading up to this, I think what happens is on the driving range, people are in a relaxed mindset. They're not – the pressure isn't there. They're not there to perform. They're just sort of – it's kind of like a Freddie Couples mentality. They're there to swing and just kind of have a good time and, you know, and relaxed, and they don't feel that pressure. But now when they've got to actually perform, they have almost like performance anxieties. And that's what happened to me at a very early age, was when I would step up to that ball, suddenly, you know, the first practice swing, I was fine. But as soon as that ball was addressed in front of my club, it's just like a switch went off. And suddenly, you know, I you know, snatch that club away a little faster, or I would swing through a little harder, and, you know, I'd either slice it or, you know, depending on what all the other factors involved, you know, I might even hook it. But my father would always say to me the same thing is, you know, you have to be able to transition from your practice swing to actually hitting the ball. And I think that's where a lot of people fail, is just like you were talking about your student there a few minutes ago, is they get on the practice range and they're hitting it, you know, quite well. But as soon as they step out into that tee, it's like it's a different person.
Well, there's a couple things that go on, I think. You know, with all due respect, I think that blacking out during the golf swing is the biggest problem in golf.
Mm-hmm.
That's when a person just can't do it. Now, like the one guy I was talking about on the golf course, that was a mindset difference. Like he was just hitting shots, then he was trying to not make mistakes. We're dead.
Right.
You know, so we make a swing in order to hit a shot. In fact, there's an awful lot of evidence that says, listen, the shot might make the swing for you. Try to hit this shot, and all of a sudden the swing moves. I see that on a daily basis. But I have a YouTube channel. I think it's on my name. I'm not sure. But anyway, I have a YouTube channel. There's a lesson with the famous Charles Barkley. And yeah, it is something else.
You got to send me.
However, here's what happened. Yeah, I will do that. So Charles comes in and he does that hitch and hit the ball. It almost hit his shoe, and I went, "Oh my God, it's real!" And the next ball, he did it again, but he did hit it about 10 yards forward, so that was good. And so I took him in my office, and I said, "Charles, what the hell are you doing?" And he goes, "You know, I have a hitting bag in my office." And he goes, "Look it, I can make a golf swing. Watch this." And he does it. It looks beautiful.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Why can't I do that with the golf ball?" Now, I've known Charles for 2 minutes at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know how big he is, and I'm just a little guy. Well, you know,
right.
A little overweight, but still little compared to him. And so I'm looking right at him. I go, "Charles, you're not trying." And he looks at me like he was going to eat me. And I said, "Wait a second. Let me ask you a question. During that practice swing, what is it you're focused on?" He goes, "Well, I'm trying to do this, and I'm trying to do this." And there were too many for me, too many things.
Right.
But he was executing a lovely golf swing, right? I said, "Okay,
mm-hmm.
Hold on. Are you focused on exactly that same thing? Are those what you're focused on trying to achieve during the swing when the ball's there?" And he sits back in the chair, he crosses arms, and he swears. And he goes, "Nobody ever told me anything other than to just let it happen after the practice swing." And I go, "Well, there you
yeah.
go. So God can't help you. I can't help you. You're not even here."
Yeah.
So then he goes through, and for 2.5 straight hours, no lie, it's on film, didn't hitch a single golf ball.
Wow.
2.5 straight hours after that. And he's like, "Man, you're going to get sick of me." I said, "Okay," because, you know, I'm not far from where he lives up here in Philly, you know. And anyway, he went to Iraq and signed autographs because that's the kind of guy he is, and nobody heard
yeah.
about it. And then he's a great guy, incidentally. He is a great guy. He was so much fun to be around. But he never came back. The season was, that was at the end of the season. Next thing I know, I get a phone call, turn on the Golf Channel, and there it is, Charles with Hank Haney. And that was actually,
yeah.
you know, that was my idea to have Charles, well, I had a partner, get in on this whole DVD and infomercial
mm-hmm.
thing. But in any case, he went right back to hitching it. You know, and I almost called him, but I didn't because I was a little angry about that. But it was really interesting to see a guy. And I said to him, "Charles, you're one of the 50 greatest basketball players ever."
Yep.
You know, however, you're going to have to be able to concentrate for 2 whole seconds if you're going to play this game.
Well, you know what's interesting? Let me just add this too. What was interesting about Charles was originally, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about him, a lot of his friends and things like that, and they said at one point, I mean, he was always apparently a very good golfer, and then all of a sudden this happened. How this happened, why this happened, I don't know. But he actually used to be able to drive the ball very well and play very well, and for some reason...
Yeah, he was
10
handicap, you know.
Yeah, for some reason, all of a sudden, he got this hitch in his game, in his swing, and he just couldn't seem to get rid of it. And... you know, obviously, you know, you had helped him with that at some point, but for some reason, that same process has you know, come around again. But, you know, it's just interesting how mentally you can take somebody that has a relatively good game and all of a sudden something just creeps in there in their mind and suddenly, you know, I mean, he couldn't hit the golf ball. I mean, literally,
well, yeah.
At first when I first used to see it, I used to think it has to be a joke. This is some PR stunt or
well, that's
something
what I
like
that first swing, I was like, "Oh my God, it's real."
Yeah.
Yeah, but I
but
do
he
think,
was doing
I
it
think
in
that
tournament.
He had some mechanical situation in his swing,
mm-hmm.
right? It was a mechanical move in his golf swing that was destined to hit the golf ball about a foot fat and a foot deep.
Yeah.
You know, who wouldn't learn some kind of yip to get out of the way of that swing? Who wouldn't?
Right.
You know, but if you give him the right move, you know, all of a sudden after a few swings, ooh, it's not going to happen. You know, it's getting person's mind on what really matters, and then having them focus on it like a rabid dog. You know, I think that's the answer. Now, in the case that it is a one of those loose synapses or whatever. A yip.
Yep.
And, you know, again, then I think you can retrain that.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I'm
but
sure
I didn't
that,
find that. In his case, I didn't find that at all.
No. I'm sure that, you know, if he was really to put the effort in, I mean, I personally wouldn't have done the Golf Channel thing, you know, nothing against Hank Haney, but to me, I just wouldn't have done that. I think it was more detrimental to his game than anything, and not that Hank is, you know, a great coach and that, but I wouldn't have, you know, put myself out there like that. I think I would have, you know, if he really wanted to improve, I think I would have done it behind closed doors and then maybe have the end result come out, but, you know, that's him. Let me just I want to move into segment three here.
Okay.
That we talked about. But I just need to do a couple of quick reminders here. For those of you tuning in a little bit later in the broadcast here, my special guest tonight is actually PJ Master teacher John Dunnigan. He's also the 2012 PJ Philadelphia Section Junior Golf Leader, as well as the 2008 Philadelphia Section Teacher of the Year. And he's currently the Director of Coaching at the White Manor Country Club up in Malvern, Pennsylvania. And I'm sure the leaves are changing up there now. Getting ready for fall, and
it's beautiful right now. Not quite in full colors, but it's getting really. Actually, we're having summer right now. It was 80 plus the last 2 days in a row.
Right. Yeah. We're battening down the hatches here in Florida. We're getting ready for the, I guess it's tropical storm, or
right.
It's actually been upgraded, I think, to Hurricane Karen.
Oh boy!
So I don't know what we're going to get. I'm going to be leaving for the weekend. I'm going into Alabama, where my girlfriend is. So I'm going to be heading in there.
Is that on purpose? Is the storm supposed to be that bad?
Well, it's only supposed to be Category 1, but it's supposed to be hitting. It's the way they've got it curving now. It's coming up in through Pensacola. I'm a little bit further east of that, over Panama City Beach, but they're saying it's anywhere from about 40 to 65 or 70 mile an hour winds. But stranger things have happened. I know it's eventually going to work its way up through Atlanta and up the eastern side, but I'm right down near the beach, so I don't want to be washed out with the rest of the garbage. So I'm heading for higher ground. But anyways, so I'm going to be doing that. But just want to let the listeners know. Again, you're listening to my special guest tonight, John Dunnigan. And October 10th is going to be Dr. Greg Ortman. Now, he is an author and wrote a great book called Golfology, which I'm in the midst of reading right now and looking through. He's going to be coming here on October 10th to talk about his book. And then he's going to be coming back on a little bit later on October 24th, where I'm going to have a couple of guests. I'm going to have Joe Watson, who came out with that really great product called No Sweat, and it's a lotion that you put on your hands. It's non-toxic and dries within about 5 seconds and doesn't leave any film or odor or anything like that. And basically what it does is prevent your hands from sweating, and it's a great product. I've used it, and you actually can get it available. You can purchase it directly from my website or blog, Golf Talk Live blog, if you want to get a bottle there. They're quite reasonably priced, I think $8.99 a bottle, and Joe will be happy to ship one out to you. And it's actually a great product, especially here in the South, when we're dealing with this heat in the summer. It's great to have that. And as I said, it's non-toxic, so you don't have to worry about any contaminants and things like that. He's going to be here on October 24th. And as I said, Dr. Greg Ortman's going to be coming back here and joining Bernie Pinder, who is the founder, and the owner of Ontic Golf. And Bernie just sent me one of the putters. I don't know if you're familiar with them, John, but Bernie has come out with a great putter, a series of putters, actually. He just sent me one just about a week or so ago, and I haven't had a chance. Unfortunately, I was in Atlanta for a weekend and didn't get a chance to use it yet, but it looks fantastic, and it was custom-made for me and my height and so forth, and just a great product. So they're going to be coming on and talking a little bit about that. And some point through the broadcast, I'm going to be joined by Barry Goldstein, who was also on the program. And this was a reschedule from an earlier show that unfortunately we had some technical difficulties with, so I invited them back to talk about that. But Bernie's going to be coming on for the first part of the program, so Dr. Greg Ortman will be joining him on the 24th. And October 17th, backing up a little bit, I'm going to have former LPGA player Penny Pulse is going to be joining me here. She's going to be talking a little bit about her time on the LPGA, and she's doing a lot of great things now. She's got some books out there, and she's doing some traveling around and talking about a lot of different things, business and otherwise. She's going to be coming on here on October 17th. And something I'm really, really excited about, and I hope, John, that you'll help spread the word for here. But on November 7th, I'm going to have a very special guest on here. Not that all my guests aren't special. Kent Novus is one of the partners in a business called Nine Iron Drink, and it's a sports hydration drink that's making the rounds out there. But it's sponsored and in partnership with Billy Casper, who I'm sure you're familiar with. Billy is going to be coming on the show and talking about not only the drink, their venture together and getting this hydration drink out there. And I've tried it. They sent me some samples of it, and it's a fantastic hydration drink. But Billy's going to be talking about his new book called The Big Three and Me, which talks about – it's an autobiography, actually. Talks about his career and so forth, and talks about, of course, the big three being Palmer, Nicholas, and Gary Player. And Billy's going to be on the show on November 7th, so I'm really excited about that. Obviously, he's won a number of tournaments, including two U.S. Opens and Masters tournament, as well as a number of other tournaments on the PGA. And he's also won, I believe, two major tournaments on the Champions Tour as well, plus another group of regular tournaments. So I'm going to be having him on November 7th. So I definitely want the listeners to tune in during that program and get a chance to perhaps even call in and talk to Billy while you're listening to the program. So that's what's rounding up the next few weeks to come. John, let's just wrap up this last segment here for tonight.
Oh, by the way, Billy Casper is a great guy. I got to spend some time with him in Morocco. I was teaching golf at the King Hassan's golf tournament. Actually, Billy saved my life. I took a picture of somebody, and you don't do that in Morocco.
Right.
You just don't do that. I didn't know, you know. But he said he is a hero in Morocco, a national hero. And everybody knows him there, and he saved me. But he's a great guy. Now, also one of the best American players, you know, very underrated. He was great.
Yeah, and this is what gets covered in some of the book, and there's in the foreword is written by the three, you know, Palmer, Nicholas, Nett jointly.
Player.
And then on the back of the book, there's got some quotes now from Trevino and a bunch of other things, and there's some great photos in this book. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. So, John, I hope you'll tune in on November 7th and maybe even call in and say hello to Billy Casper.
I've got to do that. That's cool.
So we'll pass the word, but I'll follow up with you on that, and we'll talk a little bit more. But let's, you know, as we get into this next segment, John, I wanted to give you an opportunity because you had mentioned to me when we corresponded the other day that you had done some work recently with another great PGA Tour player, an up and coming in comparison to Billy, Sean O'Hare, which most of the listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with him as well. Can you share a little bit of what you've been working on with Sean?
Yeah, we started working together just about 2 months ago before, you know, no secret, he played his way kind of off the tour this past year. Mm-hmm. And so he was going through, the Web.com Tour Finals.
Right.
And, you know, didn't really want to be there. And, you know, his game was off, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I think he'll tell you that he was, you know, maybe listening to, you know, got a case of the rabbit ears as he started to get away from stuff and had much too much thinking going on about different things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we started with putting, and, you know, 4 years ago we talked for the first time about putting, but we didn't get together, which is fine. And he said, I got more crap in my head about putting. I said, I don't know. I think maybe you have more crap about what somebody thinks is the proper way to swing a putter, but if that's putting, I have antlers. So we went right with the skills of putting, you know. And I just gave him, you know, he goes, okay, when I get back from this tournament, let's work. I said, cool, let's work. So he comes back, and he missed the cut, and that was it. And so I just saw him, we were talking, and I said, here, just give me 2 minutes, we'll putt. And now you're going to think I have some magic, awesome stuff, right? But I said, do me a favor. Don't try to make a single putt today. Don't you love saying that to a world-class golfer? Don't try to make a putt. You know, so I'm sure he's looking at me like, you know, what is wrong with you? I said, do me a favor. Just if the ball doesn't catch it, make sure the ball doesn't go more than a foot past the cup, just the whole way around.
Right.
And he texted me. I made 2 20-footers. I never make 20-footers. He shot like 500 par for 8 holes. And he says, that crap works, to one of the guys he's playing with. He didn't use the word crap. And so the next day we had a formal putting lesson. And, you know, I said, you know, here's the deal. I'm not going to look at your mechanics until you prove to me that you can't execute the skills required to be an elite putter. Deal? He goes, deal. Okay, so also that means that if you can execute the skills when we get, you know, learning the skills, that's the exact same approach for a junior golfer, right? Exact same. It's funny.
Right.
Exactly the same. So he, I'm putting him through this, you know, what I call the process, the putting process. And it has some variables. There's parts of it that are variable, but it has to do with, you know, the three skills of putting: speed, line, and read, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going over it, and I'm going, well, I think you can putt. Because he's rolling the ball. I have this training aid target disc. He's rolling it over the thing. And I go, So we're doing all this stuff, and I have this whole process of putting. It would take us an hour to get through. Anyway, he does real good. And he goes, I love that. So the next day, he comes back for another golf lesson, which I think is ironic to say the least, that I'm giving him a golf lesson. That's okay. So he comes back, and I think we're going to do a little bit of chipping and putting. And he goes, let's talk about the full swing. And I go, ooh, I thought we were going to do short game. He goes, yeah, but – so anyway, we go to the range, and he asked me some questions about full swing, about what I think. And, well, he had seen me – I think the thing that started the whole thing off, he saw me teaching one of my kids, you know, a high school player who's doing well.
Right.
And he was coming over to play our golf course. And he came down and watched, you know, young Michael – not just hitting the golf ball, but I put these guys, like I said, I put them through testing. Like the TrackMan has a test center, so I could set up any kind of test from, you know, 10-ball test to random test. It's really, really cool. And I think it's a wonderful way to practice because it makes practice a whole hell of a lot more like playing. And it engages the students, so there's no boredom going on. But anyway, he really liked the way I was, you know, I guess you would call it teaching the kid, but I call it coaching the kid. And he talked about that for a while on the golf course, I guess, to a couple guys he played with. And then so we're up there, and he's like, well, what numbers do you want to see? And I go, well, what do you want to hit? You know, how much angle downward do I want to see? How much path to the right for a draw? Where do I want the face? And we talked about that. And then, he asked me about backswing, whether up or in. And I said, well, either, whichever works better, but – if you're up more with the backswing, more vertical, you got to have a little bit more of this vertical drop. And if you're down more, you don't have to have as much. But it's always going to be a timing game. I don't care what you say. It's always going to be a game of timing.
Right.
And so the next thing I know, you know, we're working on golf swing. And we're doing it at, you know, right at the start of this web.com tour finals to get his job back, basically. You know, so I personally never had that much pressure on me in my whole life, you know, as a coach. And he, you know, he'll tell you he's that's the most pressure he's ever been under that last day of last weekend. And, you know, we worked the same way as I do with everybody else. I didn't let him see his golf swing on video for 3 straight weeks. How about that? But I said, listen, you take this golf club and you make that ball do this. Now make it do this. Now make it do that. And we worked really on getting a feel for how to hit shots which he had, you know, he said, I lost all my shots. So I said, but it's not really your swing. It might be your approach, because I think your swing is great,
right.
You know. And anyways, I mean, we did the same thing today. A staggeringly good practice session. No,
right.
I showed him his swing on video, one swing. I said, okay, there's our checkpoint for the backswing. That's it. Now let's hit some golf shots. And he started to hit more golf shots. And I think it was, jeepers, he went out and did good, like finished 11, something like that. I can't remember which week it was that he shot 64. Of course, I had tears in my eyes. So did my wife.
Right.
You know, it's been really cool because I get to talk to him. He'll call almost every day when he's on the road and talk about what happened. You know, and we talk about the process of golfing your ball, just like the putting process is a process of full swing. And then we're trying to stay away from – he's had a lot of golf swing instruction, lots and lots of it.
Right.
Lots and lots of it. So, I don't know if I'm really teaching him much anything, to be quite honest. I'm getting him back to being a golfer, and then I'm just giving him increasingly difficult tests. You know, and there are times when – go ahead.
What I was going to say – no, go ahead. You finish your thought and then
– well, so I keep – as he keeps improving, you know, I keep cutting down the target size. You know, we do this wedge distance control practice – and we the ball flight control practice, like we're only working on one side of what I call the spectrum of shots. Okay, but like today he hit that spectrum on three trajectories, you know, hard right left curve, soft left, soft curve, and then a straight ball. You know, and he hit it we didn't do a fairway wood. We didn't do a fairway wood today. But he did it all the irons up to the driver. It was stunning. Just truly stunning. And I said only one thing about his swing, you know, which was I notice every once in a while I see this. I don't want to see that anymore. And he goes, that's feedback I need. And then he was off to off to the races.
Right. And what I was, you know, what I was going to interject there a moment ago, I think with the tour players, and I had a question I was going to ask you, but let me just say this. I think sometimes these guys, and we talked a little bit about this off the air before we came on tonight, that sometimes paralysis by analysis, I think some of these guys, especially the tour players, I mean, a lot of times their swings have gotten to a point where, you know, it's literally picture perfect. They've got everything they want. And then all of a sudden, you know, they'll have a little glitch or something happening in their game, and they want to reinvent the wheel. And as I mentioned to you off air, you know, Tiger is a good example, and you know, there's others that have been out there. But a lot of times I think they get too much, like you said, the rabbit ears. They're hearing everybody talking about this and talking about that. And every time they have something going on in their game or they think they have something going on, you know, suddenly they're trying to make all these changes. And then, you know, these guys, in my opinion, when they get to this level, are so good at doing what they need to do that they don't need as much instruction as, say, somebody that's starting out the game that needs to understand how all these things work. These guys know how all this stuff works, but I think they get bombarded by so much information while they're out there playing on the different tours that I think a lot of times that they're looking for that competitive edge, and the competitiveness steps in as opposed to the player. And so they're thinking, okay, I need an edge. You know, I need to be out there winning week in, week out, and I need an edge. So they're thinking, okay, if I can do this and do that, and they start tweaking with things, the next thing you know, their game starts falling apart. And then, you know, then it becomes a mental issue. Then they can't seem to get back what they had. And I just think that, you know, what you were saying about earlier with Sean was very interesting because you really limited what you were teaching him. You
right.
didn't try to, you know, reinvent the wheel, as it were, with him, because you already know the caliber of player he is.
Right. Well, that's, you know, think about all those years of practice and all that myelination
sure.
in the brain going on, right? And then we're going
right.
to decide to have a whole new way of swinging a golf club and then just literally shred all that stuff. So you're always going to want to end up going back to whatever
right.
is the most grooved channel in your brain, right? So I do think that there's not one way to hit a golf ball, okay? And I think that most
right.
of my buddies who teach golf, and I know some really, really, really good teachers, they believe that. They're you know, more skill-based than you have to swing like this. Because, you know, for everybody who's got to swing like this, I can tell you 10 people who swing exactly the opposite way and are world-class golfers.
Right.
But I
right.
do know now, I talked to Sean Foley, and what he said mm-hmm. was that Tiger is physically incapable of making that old swing.
Right.
He can't do it. His body, you know, he looks like Adonis, but I guess his... you know,
knee and his wrist,
he's a hurt person.
Yeah,
you know?
I think I'm sure that's probably a lot of it. Let me very quickly ask you, because we've got to wrap up here, but I want to get this question because I mentioned I was going to ask you, how do you approach a tour player as opposed to high handicapper when you're you know, giving them a lesson? And I think you've probably pretty much answered it.
Exactly the same.
But
you know what? That's a good. So Sean came out and practiced with my kids group, the Train for Excellence group.
Mm-hmm.
It's the high school players that are all, they'll probably, let's see, you know, out of the 7 or 8 guys that are in it, they have another year. I'll say 3 of those guys will definitely get a college scholarship for playing golf. So it's
wow.
designed for that, you know. And then the kids in the next group, look out for them, because they're going to have, you know, 5 and 6 years of this kind of coaching. So they're going to be
mm-hmm.
good. But he came and practiced with the kids. Isn't that cool? The kids were out
yep.
of their freaking mind. It was awesome.
Oh, I'm sure. I was just going to say, I'm sure.
yeah.
I'm sure they were
and
loving
he was,
that.
We were talking about playing golf during this class, and Sean said something. Oh, yeah. He was – I always bring some kind of sports psychology into the kids' classes. Anyway, we were talking about something, you know, dealing with adversity. And that day that he shot 64, and I think it was in Indiana, but I'm not sure, he goes, I had a bad warm-up, got a bad feeling. I hit it squirrely off the first 2 holes and made 2 pars, but I started to panic, and then I thought about what you said during the kids' class. The kids went nuts when I told them that. And he said,
oh, wow.
I just relaxed, kept breathing, and lo and behold, you know, bogey-free 64. That was really, really cool. I teach him, coach him exactly the same way as I do. You know, I had a little 12-year-old superstar my last lesson of the night. And I coach him exactly the same way. And maybe it's because I'm just not very good at this, but that's okay.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a good job to me. John, I want to thank you. Yeah, hey, it's a learning process for the teachers, I think, as well as we move on in age and that. I think we learn a little bit more each time. It's like we talked about earlier. And I believe this was off air as well, but you know, if we knew then what we know now, you know, it would make a world of difference. But you know what, you learn things as you go on, and as you are teaching new students and so forth, you pick up things through them as well that actually help your abilities as a teacher to hone new skills and to make changes and to adapt. And that's something really that we all have to do, is learn to adapt, because the game is changing. Whether we like it or not, the game is changing. It's evolving. Some good, some bad. You know, we talked about the equipment earlier, and you know, there are some good advancements with equipment, but at the same time, there's some negative sides to it. So we have to learn to adapt with it. But John, I want to thank you very much for coming on the program tonight. We're just got a few minutes here left, and I've got to wrap things up. But I want to thank you for joining me this evening. For those of you that tuned in towards the end, don't panic. The whole conversation's been auto-recorded and will be available in about 20 minutes, so you can listen to it in its entirety. And I hope you will. It's been a great conversation, and certainly enjoyed enjoyed having John on the program. John, of course, is a PGA Master professional. He's the director of coaching at White Manor Country Club up in Malvern, Pennsylvania, and he was the 2012 PGA Philadelphia Section Junior Golf Leader and the 2008 PGA Philadelphia Section Teacher of the Year. So definitely a very qualified instructor out there, and he's been working, as he just indicated here in the last segment of the show. Now, I've asked this of really of everybody that's been a guest on my program. I'm going to be starting a new segment in the new year, probably around February. I'm going to let Christmas roll by and New Year's and that sort of thing. But a new segment called Coach's Corner, and I'm going to have a number of instructors and coaches and that sort of thing on at one time, probably two or three at a time, and allow the listeners a chance to call in and talk to the coaches and get some tips and things like that. So I hope that you will join in on that program. You certainly have an open invitation to come back anytime you want, but I definitely would like you to participate. Yeah, participate in that. And what we're going to do is rotate it out so that, you know, obviously we realize you guys are busy and have your own schedules to deal with. But what we'll do is we'll rotate it out, and it might be once a month, it might be once every couple of months that you'll come in, and we'll try and mix it up each time so that there's some different people on at the same time, just so that it makes it more interesting and a little bit more fun. But I think you'll enjoy it, and I hope that that you'll participate in that as well. And
I would love to. Thanks for having me tonight. I enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Again, I enjoy doing this. The purpose of this program is really to bring to my listeners some great instruction and some great people in this profession that don't normally you get to hear from. And I wanted to create this vessel, if you will. And I've said this many times as well, that probably my listeners are getting sick of me talking about it, but I'm going to talk about it anyways. Really, the program Golf Talk Live is really something that I wanted to do to bring both the instructors and also other golf industry types. We're going to have other players and things like that coming on in the weeks and months to come. But as I mentioned earlier, November 7th, I want all of you to tune in for some great opportunity to learn from a gentleman that's played this game for many, many years and played at the highest level. Mr. Billy Casper is going to be coming on, talking about a number of things, not just his game, but also going to be introducing to many of you, probably for the first time, a great business venture that he's involved with and endorsing. And also I'm going to be talking to him a little bit about his book, The Big Three and Me, which talks really is an autobiography, and I think it's going to be very good. And I got my autographed copy from him just last week, so I got to dig into it and get it read in the next few weeks so I can talk to him with some confidence about his book. But I'm looking forward to that. So I hope, not only with the listeners, but I hope, John, you'll tune in for that program as well. And I invite you to even call in if you'd like to talk to Billy. But
yeah, I'm going to try to do that, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm actually going to be speaking with Billy and the other gentleman, Kent Novus, who's going to be coming on from Nine Iron Drink, who's involved with the business. He's one of the partners in it. They're going to be coming on and talking about that together, and then we'll, of course, talk about Billy's career and book a little bit. But I'm going to be talking with him in a conference call on the 1st of November, so I'm excited about that because I've never spoken to Mr. Casper. I'm looking forward to sort of an informal conversation and talk a little bit about coming on the program and things like that. But that's going to be on November 7th. But again, John, I want to thank you very much for being a guest on Golf Talk Live tonight. I thoroughly enjoy it. I enjoy listening to all of the other teaching professionals out there and coaches. And I think that we do a great service to the industry. And I think that there's a lot of wonderful ones that I've had the opportunity to speak with and have on the program. And I hope that you will come back many, many times and again, participate in Coach's Corner next year. So, John, have a great evening. Thank you very, very much for coming on. And much continued success. And much continued success with Mr. O'Hare. I hope everything continues to go well there as well, which I'm sure it will.
I sure hope so. We're working hard, you know. Good things come when you work hard. Thank you very much,
right.
Ken. I appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. We'll talk to you soon. And I think you had mentioned something. You were maybe going to send a book or something out.
I'm going to bring you the whole catalog.
Perfect. And I think I sent you out the address, did I not?
Yes.
I think you got my address. Okay. Also, if you could dig up that YouTube clip of Charles Barkley, I would love to have a look at that.
I'll email you the link. Very good.
Okay.
All right,
good.
Sir.
John, again, thank you very much. Have a great evening and a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Ted. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, for those of you, just got a moment or two left here before I sign off for the evening. I want to thank again one last time my special guest, John Dunnigan, for coming on the program this evening. Again, he's the director of coaching up at the White Manor Country Club up in Malvern, Pennsylvania, PGA Master professional, actually. And just a great guy to have on the program. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Just remember that we're on here every Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time here on blogtalkradio.com. And the link that to tune into the program, and I hope you'll pass it around, is blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive. We're on every Thursday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. And normally I run the program about an hour to an hour and a half, depending on what topics I have to cover and what guests I have. But the program will be extending out to 2 hours come the new year as I get more involved and things like that, especially when we start the Coach's Corner segment. So you want to be tuning in for that for sure. For those of you that are new to the program, just remember you can always call in at any time during the live performance. It is, as I said, auto-recorded. During the recorded version, obviously, you can't call in. But when during the live performance, which starts at 6 p.m. Central and normally runs through to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, you can call in at 646-716-4667. And you can either speak to myself or my guests if you have some questions. We would love to hear from you. And you can also email me if those of you a little shy don't want to talk on the phone and talk on live air. You can certainly email me a question or two, or just maybe a topic or a suggestion for an upcoming show that you'd like to hear on Golf Talk Live. You can email me personally at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And I would really love it for those of you that listen to the program, if you haven't done so already, I would love it if you'd visit my Facebook page for the program. It's facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. Visit there and like the page, and feel free if you want to put up a comment or two or questions. You can do that on Facebook as well. I'll certainly be more than happy to read them out in the program. And again, I don't do a lot of Twittering, but I am on Twitter, and the handle is Ted and Buck CEO. So you can certainly look me up on Twitter and send me a tweet if you want, and I will do my best to read that out in the program as well. And lastly, of course, visit the website at www.golftalkliveblog.com. There's some great products on there. The No Sweat Lotion is on there. You can purchase it right from the website. You can click on the link and order as many bottles as you want. I strongly recommend that you do it. It's a great gift for that golfer out there. And if you're a golfer yourself, particularly if you're playing in a warmer climate, it really works well. And as I said, it's non-toxic. You spray it, you know, literally on your hands and just rub it in all over your hands, and it dries within a matter of seconds. So get that as well. You can order that directly through the Golf Talk Live blog.com website. And also the in-your-face view base is available on there. You've heard the last month you've heard me talk about that. It's basically a stand for your smartphone or iPhone that clips on really just about to anything, but it clips on a golf cart or a golf bag and securely holds your smartphone or iPhone. So if you're using those apps out there, guys, and you want a great way to be able to watch those apps, especially if it's a GPS app or just a golf video app, it'll clip onto your golf cart. You can use it while you're playing your round. Anyways, I want to thank, again, my special guest, John Dunnigan, for joining me this evening. And join me here next week on Golf Talk Live at 6 p.m. Central next Thursday on Golf Talk Live. Thank you, everybody. God bless, and have a great weekend.